This is the Living Fearless Today podcast, a show that helps men like you and me who are struggling to get unstuck and overcome fear to live confidently and courageously. I'm your host and transformation coach, Mike Forrester, helping you create the change you want now. Join me as I interview men who've conquered their challenges and soared to success as they spill their secrets on how they live fearless today. Well, hello and welcome back, my friend. And Devin Ash is joining me this week, and Dev and I have had just amazing conversations. And dude, I appreciate his flexibility. We had some technical challenges last time. He's come back, and man, I'm looking forward to talking about like social fluency, and Devin's going to get into explaining that. But man, suffice it to say, it's something that helps us with the community, our connections, and just feeling like we have a place. We know how to fit in and still be ourselves and authentic, but be able to facilitate and grow those connections, which, man, that is a core component of our success, right? I mean, just doing it lone wolf doesn't work long term. So we're going to get into like resiliency, being flexible, and man, just a whole bunch of things here with Devin. So Devin, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm great, man. I appreciate you being flexible as well. I think the technical difficulties were more on my side last time, so I appreciate getting a chance to come back and give it another shot.
Hey, absolutely, man. It was a great talk.
Yeah, we actually ended up having a really fun conversation. We just didn't record it.
We did. It was just one of those that the technical aspects got in the way. And then when you know it, once you and I started chatting, it was like, yeah, hey, everything is working smooth.
So yeah.
It's like, all right,
we were just supposed to have that conversation.
Let's make it happen.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. And I mean, the amazing thing, we'll use that conversation kind of as like a proof of concept, right, Devin?
Sure.
In community, we can see certain stuff, but it's often the people around us that help us to see things that, you know, like we don't see, that it's like, oh my gosh, how could I be so blind? It's like that duh moment. And, you know, I told you about the coaching and my love for barbecue. We started talking about that and you were like, dude, you just need to integrate the two of them. And I've contemplated that before, but the way you were helping me think it through, dude, that's what it's about, is having somebody else to help you see those blind spots and look for ways. You know, that's a simple example, but I mean, Devin, if I'm not showing up for my kids, for myself, for my wife, the way I should be, having somebody like you, you know, that's in community that can speak to me and show me, hey, Mike, you're falling down in this area. Dude, that stuff that's vital. You know, mm-hmm. It's almost like it helps us to play a bigger picture. You know what I mean? Like to avoid the potholes that we have in our path.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, what you're describing is, you know, thriving, how you can thrive in the world, how you can, have a great impact and be better and all that sort of stuff. And I do want to talk about that, but I want to start with, this is a survival thing too. This is just even just getting by. You need to have social connections. I just shared something to my Instagram. That was Professor G, Scott Galloway. Great, really like level-headed guy. I love the stuff that he puts out. But it was like a chart of the correlation of these various things with an unexpectedly early death. And there was like smoking and bad diet and not exercising, and all these things were on the list. And at the very top of the list, and kind of like quite a bit wider of a kind of threat, is low or no social connections, or a lack of social connection. So it's literally correlated to our survival, how long we live, and obviously how well we live, you know, just surviving, that's important. You want to live a long time and you know, get to enjoy this lifetime as much as you can, but doing it with people that you love, doing it with a partner that you're over the moon about, doing it with a group of friends who respect you and make a lot of time for you, doing it with you know, a community of people that have your back. That to me is the essence of what it is to be a human. So you know, just from a very basic fundamental kind of evolutionary survival standpoint, if you don't have people around you that want to support you, you're screwed. You know, you're not going to do very well. You're going to be stuck out in the wild alone. And, you know, back when we lived in tribes, that was equivalent of death. So we have like all these wirings in us, loneliness, that feeling of wanting to reach out to someone, that feeling of desire to, or just that feeling of like, oh, I don't like this feeling. I'm lonely. We make it just like this. Oh, you know, it's a sad feeling. No, it's a drive to move you towards the scary and mildly uncomfortable thing of putting yourself out there in a social situation, because your body is telling you you're not safe if you keep being alone. The power of social fluency, you know, in modern day, it's pretty obvious. The more able you are to connect with people, you know, in your day-to-day life, you're more likely to get a better job, more likely to find an amazing partner, or more likely to build a community of like-minded people. But this is not new. This is ancient stuff. You know, they call it a soft skill, but to me, a soft skill means something that is malleable and changing all the time. And that when I think about someone getting like some kind of AI certification, that seems like a hard skill. Oh yeah, that person can work with, you know, some kind of programming language. But that programming language literally is obsolete after a month of it being released, and there's a new thing, a new updated version. So to me, this is the hardest of skills. This is the most like kind of grounded, real skill that applies in every area of your life. Is it important? No, you should get like this technical skill. And it's like, no, this is the technical skill. If you can connect with people, you'll make more money, you'll have more fun, you'll feel more connected, and thus feel like you're more on purpose.
It absolutely is. There was a time for me, Devin, where I thought I needed to get along with everybody. You know, that was true social adaptability, social skills. Is that what social fluency is? Or are there going to be times where it's like, hey, dude, that's just not somebody for you. You know, it's not a connection. I mean,
yeah.
What is that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%. So that's a great question. So the way I see it, social fluency allows you to have agency over who you put in your top five. You know, they say like you are the kind of amalgamation of the top five people that you spend the most time with. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm sure there's something to it. But social fluency gives you the ability to choose who those people are. And what that does is when you have a lot of options, you don't suffer fools. You don't put up with stuff that isn't a good fit. You're kind of like, I don't know. I don't need to, you know, force this relationship to work because it's my only relationship that, you know, that I'll have an access to. So no, I mean, ultimately when you have a lot of abundance, then you can decide, yeah, this person's awesome, I want to spend more time with them, or no, this person's not really for me. So no, certainly, acquiescing to everyone in your life is not the point of social fluency at all. In fact, being assertive and having boundaries with people is one of the kind of key tenets of what we teach. So I'll just kind of run through the various things that we teach. So we talk about body language a lot. You know, this is communicating the most of what your energy is. So if you bring a really timid body language, but you, you know, are saying these really interesting things, but you're not present in body language, a lot of it is vocal tonality. So included within body language is how you say things, not just the words you say. So the words you say is like 7%, body language is the rest. Body language is very important. Conversational agility. So that 7%, while, you know, it only makes up 7%, it's a pretty important 7% because it's what has separated us from the rest of the animal kingdom is our ability to, you know, convey ideas with complex language. So can you keep a conversation going forever and ever? And is your mind loose enough in high pressure situations to be creative and see different places to take it? A subset within conversational agility, but it ends up being almost a bigger section of our training, is humor. Being able to make someone laugh and then being able to have like a funny rapport where they're also making you laugh, it creates a really strong bond. So when one of you is just laughing, the bond isn't formed. But when both of you are laughing, that's when the bond is tightly formed. When one of you is laughing, the bond may go one single direction. So if I'm not laughing that much, but I'm making a lot of jokes, people might feel a bond towards me. But when I also laugh with them, that's when the bond really kind of locks in. Right. So humor is interesting because humor is, you know, a lot of people will be like, oh, I have a good sense of humor. Like, you know, I make people laugh all the time, but they're using what you could call low status humor, where they're making fun of themselves all the time. If you just make fun of yourself all the time, you're basically communicating that you have low self-esteem. You don't want to take any risks. You don't want to possibly offend people because you perceive them to be higher value than you. And thus, if you were to make fun of them or say something that was kind of risque and they didn't like it, then they would, you know, not include you. Whereas if you use high status humor, which is what we teach, you would make fun of people and like politics and religion and the environment and all these sorts of things. You'd make fun of that outwardly most of the time, but then you would also make fun of yourself a little bit, because if you're always making fun of other people, it's not very nice, and not that nice is the goal, but you're coming across in a way that is really unlikable. It might be funny, but it's mean. It's got this kind of like mean energy. Whereas if you're making fun of other people, but then you also make fun of yourself, that's true high status humor. And that's where that self-deprecation doesn't come across as low self-esteem. It comes across as actually incredibly high self-esteem, because I'm confident, I can make fun of other people, I'm unthreatened by people, and I can make fun of myself. And it makes me look like a magnanimous leader who's not like kind of a douchey kind of guy. So, yeah. So I was just kind of going through the things that we teach. So, body language, conversational agility, humor, and then assertiveness, and being able to set boundaries with people, being able to be clear about this is okay, this isn't okay, and knowing how to have those conversations so that you don't alienate people and ruin relationships, but you are clear with boundaries. And then, of course, we also teach people how to flirt and how to strike up conversations with strangers. But, you know, I've been working on this for 16 years professionally. And about 13 or 14 years ago, I taught this at Google and Apple and YouTube, and teaching corporate training stuff. So I do a little bit of corporate training still. And that area is really interesting to me. And basically, we just take out the flirting. You know, we just remove that, but then all the other stuff still applies.
Dude, before you started talking about the humor aspect, I was going to bring up the part of Devin, man, when I was struggling with, like, the fear, the anxiety, the self-worth, it was self-deprecating humor. That was all I practiced.
Interesting.
But here was the logic, and this was subconscious. The logic was, if I picked on myself, I took the power away from you putting me down. And sure. So it was almost like a safety thing, like totally. a power play. But at that point, dude, yeah, it was, you know, I was doing it to look for acceptance and then also pull the power away from being made fun of, right? If I made fun of myself, you couldn't make fun of me. That yeah. was the skewed logic.
Yeah. Dude. I love that you're aware of that. That's the reason that people do it. They're like, well, if I make fun of myself, you don't have to, so you won't. The problem is it still has the same effect of someone else making fun of you. In fact, it's worse because
yes.
it communicates to everyone your true beliefs, but also there's a concept called self-signaling. And self-signaling is like how you treat yourself. You start having stories about life and you and where you fit. And so in that scenario, you're self-signaling that you don't deserve respect and you don't deserve to be honored and all these sorts of things that are going on. So I appreciate you sharing that. It's not like a flip you can just, you know, change on the spot. It's a thing you have to shift over time.
Full. Yeah. I mean, to be 100% honest, it's still something like if I get to a position of being in a funk, right? If I'm having something that's stressful, you know, I have to look at things and consciously go, hey, am I going back into what was, you know, practiced for so many years and just comes almost as like, you know, this rote process, this ingrained behavior, you know, kind of just acting things out. And it's like, whoa, put the brakes on. Mm. And I'm aware enough to go, wait a minute. Okay. Let's assess things. Let's look at what's going on. Where am I at? How am I feeling? What am I doing? Mm. And so I can catch it and I can back myself out. But dude, it took a while because that was just how I found connection.
Yeah.
And tried to gain acceptance. Like if we were in a crowd of like 8 people, I'm looking for who's got the strongest personality, who's the leader of the pack, so to speak, working to win their acceptance so that then I thought I would be accepted by everybody else. If you, Devin, said, hey, I'm like the strongest personality here, then everybody else and you accept me, then everybody else has to accept me. But the problem was I wasn't accepting myself. Mm-hmm. And so once I left that circle, I was back to that empty spot and going, okay, where's my next fix?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's validating me?
Exactly. Next? Where can I grasp onto to make myself feel okay? Yeah, man. I mean, again, I appreciate your vulnerability. I don't think that's an uncommon practice. I think we all do that to a certain degree. It doesn't serve us equally. You know, all of us are kind of screwing ourselves over when we take that path. So, you know, kudos for becoming aware of it and making that shift. I mean, the trick is, you know, in those environments, if you can show up not as someone who needs to be accepted by the more dominant kind of characters in the environment, but rather someone who's an equal of those people. So one of the things that I've heard, you know, I do okay financially. I'm middle of the road entrepreneur, do well. I'm not one of these like, you know, 8-figure earner kind of guys that you see on Instagram, but I hang out with a lot of them. And I've always hung out with very powerful people. And one of my friends years and years ago, probably like 10, 12 years ago, was like, he's like, you hang out with all these millionaires and they treat you like a peer plus. Like there's some kind of way that you show up that, you know, and I was like, yeah, of course, because money is new. you know, value is old, money is new. And so when you are able to bring value in different ways, and again, that comes back down to, can you stay calm when you feel a little nervous? Can you present yourself in a way that people get it and then they feel like drawn to you? Then, you know, how much money you have in your bank account. Yeah, there's something to that. Like you do want to be, again, bringing value in the world, and that value is kind of translates into financial means. But there's this other value, which is just this feeling of connection. When you can make someone feel seen, when you can laugh with them, when you can connect with them, they automatically feel curious about you and they want to invest in you and want to spend time with you.
Yeah. When you're bringing value and you are a person of value, it's a different dynamic and a different conversation. You know, rather than looking for, you know, hey, what can I get out of this person? And then, you know, like we talked about, the self-deprecating aspect where you're coming, not feeling like you belong.
Yeah.
When you're just like, hey, I'm here and I'm here to be present, to help. I know I have value. That's a different presence altogether.
Totally.
I do want to jump back. Like, we haven't gotten into your story on this part.
Sure.
And it's like, I want to jump back because how you got here, this was kind of almost like a natural skill that you picked up, but then you've honed it to where it can be something that's like a skill. I know we talked about soft skill, but a skill that we can pick up and hone, right? It's not just, you know, hey, I read this book, I picked up the skill, boom, I'm done. It's an ongoing process,
and sure is.
Having those key aspects to it. So dude, you were like all through high school and you were moving every year. And so, you know, that's got to create like its own issues as far as, hey, I created these relationships, I created friends, now I'm gone. Now I've got to repeat this process. And you're doing it time after time after time after time, to where it's like, dude, I just want to settle down. I mean, where, like, as you look back and you're graduating high school or finishing it up, like, where were you at kind of perspective of seeing yourself and then relationships, the value of relationships, or were they valuable at that point?
That's a good question. And that last part is interesting too, because I was so good at making new friends, I did have a tendency to like really embrace the love the one you're with sort of mentality. And so I would sort of lose touch with people. As I've gotten older, I've started to really appreciate the value of long lasting friendships. So I've rekindled relationships with old friends from back then, and, you know, make a point to maintain those. But yeah, growing up, moved around a lot. Each year, fresh start, fresh school, Canada, the US, and Europe. The only school I went to for 2 years was my last 2 years of high school. So my junior and my senior year were in Las Vegas. The year before that, I was at Columbine High School. And then the year before that, I was in the UK. I was bouncing around and I became a natural. I became someone who could just naturally connect with people, build relationships. But I didn't know what I was doing. I was just doing it. I'm going off to university and I'm trying to figure out, like, what's the thing that I do. I never, you know, was like, oh, I want to be a scientist, or I want to be a doctor, or I want to be a engineer. I never had any of that. It was always just people. So I went off and I studied marketing and I studied communication. And then when I was finishing up university, my last year, or my last actually paper that I had to hand in, the day it was due, I was diagnosed with skin cancer on my face. So I had a big piece of cancer here that I had, it was like white. So I never thought cancer was going to be white. So they had to remove it. And so to do that, they cut a triangle out here and then they separated the skin all the way down to my jawline here and stretched it up. So pretty major surgery at 23. Right now, it's not so bad. But for about a year and a half, it was this big, pink, gnarly scar. My face was kind of dragged down like that. I was pretty messed up. I got depressed. I got pretty reclusive. I couldn't, you know, talk to girls. I couldn't make new friends effectively. So I kind of leaned on my old friends, which I was fortunate to have a lot of. And I got pretty low, but I got to a point where I was like, I need to figure this out. I need to bounce back. You know, I remember hearing someone talking about, like, doesn't matter how far you go down, as long as you have resilience, you know, you can bounce back. And so I started reading books on psychology, on social dynamics, on, you know, seduction, on cognitive behavior therapy. And I started seeing that there were patterns that I was doing before and getting great results. So I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe I should just try to reintegrate some of the things that they don't feel as natural now, because before I was doing it as a natural, just whatever felt right. They felt unnatural because I was so anxious and so nervous, but I started doing it and then I started getting good results again. And I was like, oh, I can just start behaving in the way that maybe feels unnatural, but actually I know it's the natural way that I used to do it. And I can get great results. And so I started doing it and then I started sharing it. And then I worked with, my best friend, and we, brought it into formation as social fluency. And we created, the methodology that we share. The essence of it is, understanding that the way you present yourself is creating a picture in the minds of other people and also creating a picture in your own mind. So that's the kind of, self-signaling that I talked about. And you can change your behaviors and then you'll get new feedback from your environment. And then that new feedback will change your beliefs. So a lot of people do therapy and they just talk to someone and, you know, they're hoping that if they change their beliefs, that their life will change. And our attitude is that we know we do some work around beliefs and working on your self-perception, but our main goal is change your behaviors and then your beliefs will change. And then that will reinforce those behaviors to feel natural. So it's kind of a different route that a lot of, you know, a lot of coaches and a lot of people take. We're not about talking your stuff out. We're more about going out and having interactions and having, new reactions from people and then letting those reactions that you may have never gotten before start to integrate and become more of who you are.
So what I hear you tell me is if I go and eat donuts and see myself as slim, it's not going to work. I have to go to the gym and work out, and I can still envision myself, but they go hand in hand. I have to put in the work with the thought, but also with the action.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And, you know, have a donut, treat yourself every once in a while. You know, I kind of jokingly, so I work with a lot of single guys and I jokingly say, like, don't just do online dating. Don't expect to meet your wife online dating, but treat it like McDonald's, treat it like fast food. Every once in a while, treat yourself, have a little nibble. It's fine. But if your diet consists of donuts, as you say, or just fast food in general, then you're not getting all your nutrients. You're not kind of giving your body what it needs to be effective and to thrive. So treat yourself, you know, give yourself a break. I'm definitely not one of those, you know, super alpha type coaches where it's like, you got to go hard all the time. You know, that's not my, I honestly don't think that's good for most people. There's like a couple of guys out there that, you know, are doing it for the rest of us and making us feel, like weaklings. But, I think what really works is, having support and having a plan and, you know, working, kind of chipping away at that plan, a little bit, but taking days off. And, you know, one of the things that I get guys to do is strike up conversations with people that they feel kind of intimidated by. And we tell our students, you know, don't do it every day necessarily, but do it 4 times a week and do it 3 times each of those days. You know what I mean? So like 4 days a week, you go out and you strike up conversations with people. And on those days, you do 3 each day, because the first one always sucks. The first approach, we don't really like to think of it as approaching. We think of it more as like, engaging. So you're just engaging with people and see where it goes. But the first one always feels a little nervous. Second one might be a little bit better. Third one feels quite good. And then once you do that, you're done. You don't have to do more, but you're kind of already over the tipping point. And now if you keep going and trying, you'll probably start getting really good results. So that's generally what we say, 4 times a week. And when you go out to meet people, you know, three times, each of those days.
Gotcha. So when you meet somebody, like I was talking about who I was before Devin, you know, self-deprecating humor, low self-worth, how do you have somebody begin engaging to where it's like, okay, Devin, I don't want to be assertive in like a negative way, right? That just can be off-putting if I go to the extreme. But like, how do you begin to learn, hey, this is healthy humor, this is that high level humor you talked about, and this is how I can present myself and show up in ways that I'm unfamiliar with? How do you begin making that transition from, you know, unhealthy, low self-worth to confident, genuine?
It takes time. And I think that's one of the things that, it's kind of one of the reasons that I end up, you know, people decide not to work with me is because they might want like instant results. You know, what they think, what the internet keeps telling them is possible. I can get pretty fast results being like a month. I can start to see results for someone. So slow is the first thing. It takes time. Don't rush this process. And also know, and I think you alluded to this earlier in the conversation, it's a lifelong process. I'm still working on it. You're still working on it. It's just like, if we're not making ourselves a lifelong project, what are we doing? Like, the only time I'm going to be done growing is when I'm dead, as far as I'm concerned. So I'll kind of give you a breakdown of like week one. So it's a 5-month training. Week one, it's like, assess your home. Assess your living situation. Assess your clothing. Assess your friend circle. Assess your relationship dynamics with, you know, your family. Like just kind of like a lot of like just taking stock of yourself. Then we talk about status and understanding how status works. And it's a triggering topic for some people, but it's important that you understand it, because it is part of the ecosystem that we all live in, and all animals live in it. So understanding it and then understanding how to work with it and how to change your self-perception and also the perception of other people. So just, this is kind of like the understanding the why and understanding the how. And then we get into like the kind of nuts and bolts in future trainings. So week one, first steps as far as like homework, which, you know, every week is going to have different homework. But week one, it's like, no one loves this part, but it's like, take a cold shower. Uncomfortable.
All cold plunge, man. All cold plunge.
Yeah.
Over the cold shower.
Oh, me too. That's funny. I have a cold plunge on my patio and I much prefer the cold plunge over cold showering. Cold showering is intense. But most people don't have access to the cold plunge. I guess you could fill up your bathtub. That would work. You know, you're taking a shower and then the last 30 seconds, you just blast cold water. And the idea of it, we over the course of the training, we work people up to like a 3-minute cold shower. But the idea of it initially is just like, get uncomfortable and survive. Get uncomfortable and survive and realize that it's not so bad. And when you do that, especially first thing in the morning, the rest of your day just feels a little easier. And so the next piece of homework that they're going to be doing is maintaining eye contact. And so this is all week one still, but maintaining eye contact with someone until they look away. So holding eye contact with someone until that person looks away. And they're going to do that every morning. Another thing they're going to do every morning is they're going to say hello to the first woman that they see. So when this is when I work with guys, we also work with women and they have different homework assignments from my female coach. But when I'm working with guys, just say hi to the first woman you see. Doesn't have to be someone that you're super intimidated by. It can be a little old lady and you can just make her morning and say, hey, good morning. And you know, that's it. So you're breaking your own personal comfort with the cold shower. You're putting yourself out into the world with a hello and with the eye contact. And so that's week one. And then week two, it gets a little bit harder. And week three, it gets a little bit harder. And week four, it gets a little bit harder. And, you know, if I was to show someone the homework that they're going to get in week eight, they'd be like, oh God, no, there's no way I'm going to do that. But when you scale up towards it, it's not so bad. And week 20, you know, you're doing stuff that you, old you would have been like, there's no possible way I'm going to do this. But because we take a slow and steady approach, and we, you know, reward ourselves throughout the process with, you know, small wins and celebrations. By the time you get there, it feels easy because it's just the logical next step. So slow, steady, and with a lot of rewards throughout is the answer to, you know, how do we get there?
I love that you are making it so it's like, face the discomfort, don't run from it.
Yeah,
because this was something like that I was doing. I didn't realize it, but I was doing it, and I see it in my clients as well, where it's like, you will avoid discomfort and like totally lean into comfort. And when given two choices, it's like, which one's the least uncomfortable? it's just like this hurdle to get through that builds that confidence and says, no, you are more than what you believe. And so the first thing where it's like, you're talking about 30 seconds under the water, man, you get in there in those first 5 seconds, you're just like, nope, deuces, later, I'm gone. But as you get that 30 seconds, it's like, well, how long can I go?
Yeah.
What else can I do? And I love that you're like building blocks upon blocks upon blocks to going back to the gym, man. You're building up endurance and strength. You're pushing those internal muscles that hadn't been activated before.
Yeah.
And just really giving them the strength to continue. Cause that journey, man, you talked about it earlier. It's a lifelong transformation, man. Those muscles need to be exercised.
Yeah. And here's the thing is, all of our muscles over the last 4 years have atrophied, okay, you know, to a certain degree. And we all need to get back kind of warmed up into the social realm.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even me who, you know, I've dedicated my life to this, I felt quite socially awkward getting back out into the world. So we all need this. We all need to work this muscle. It's like, it's truly, if you don't use it, you lose it. And just like a muscle, it's not something that you do instantly, or you look like one of those, you know, dudes on Instagram who's like put saline into their muscle groups and they look ridiculous. I don't know if you've seen these guys, but they're just like fake muscle guys. And you don't want a quick pump like that. You want something that is healthy and builds up over time. And that's the kind of essence of social fluency, is you build up these social skills over time and your communication just gets dialed in little bit, gets better and better.
Well, and the amazing thing about it, Devin, is it's like, it's one decision away, whether it's, hey, I'm just starting out and, you know, hey, I'm figuring out who I am and what I'm doing and taking that self-assessment, right? I'm beginning to do uncomfortable things, whether that's where you're at, or like you're talking about, hey man, I've done this for years and years, I'm out of practice. The important thing is making a decision to jump in there and start again. And it's almost like jumping on a bike. Hey man, it could have been a decade since I was on a bike. Okay. You know, I may wobble, but you know, I'm still capable of pushing those pedals and moving down the street and having that momentum and building it up and it becoming more natural.
Yeah. So that's a great metaphor.
I love the fact that it's right there available to us. It's just a decision that we need to make to begin taking the action and moving in that direction.
Yeah.
To bring about the change in our life. So
totally.
Well, dude, Devin, I love the fact that it's like you have taken us from, you know, don't do this alone. Don't look to try and avoid the discomfort, step into it. And that, you know, hey, there is value in the relationships and the community. And this is stuff that we can do long term. It's a journey. So whether you know what you're doing or whether you're, you know, an old pro, just jump on in, man. Mm-hmm. And, dude, I love it, Devin. How can guys connect with you outside of this podcast, man?
That's a great question. I love that question. Yeah, so I'm on social media. That's one way to get in touch with me. I try not to be on social media that much, to be honest. So, you know, my assistant uploads all the stuff and replies to comments and all that. So I'm not really on there much, but that is one way. So it's at Social Fluency on most of them, or at @social_fluency at, you know, one of those two, you'll find me. And socialfluency.com is my website. And on there, people will find a couple different videos that they could watch. One is like a 20-minute long kind of webinar thing where I explain a bunch of this stuff, and there's some really good insights in there. And I think it's a quick one. You just jump in 20 minutes, you're good. But then if people want a deeper dive, they can get into a training that I created that was going to be a paid thing. And then I decided the lockdowns were kind of stopping, I was like, you know what, I'll just give this away. Maybe this will just be a good way to meet new possible clients and students. So I've created a program called Small Talk that was going to be a paid course, and now it's free. I don't know if I'm going to keep it free forever. So right now it's free. And that is at socialfluency.com, and you'll see it's like the banter course. So if you go look for that, you'll see a bunch of, it's like a full on like class. It's like 8 or 9 modules, really valuable, like a lot of homework assignments and little things to do. And that's like a great way for people to get an idea, a better idea of what I teach. So that would be socialfluency.com. That's the place to find more stuff.
Awesome. And we'll be sure to have that all in the show notes.
Great. Appreciate that.
So people can find your social links and the website as well. So, well, Devin, man, thank you so much. I really appreciate, again, you coming back, joining, making this happen, and your patience on it, and then giving us all the insight and encouragement to bring the change wherever we are. So thank you, my friend.
My pleasure, Pit Master.
Thank you, Devin.
thanks so much, my friend, for joining me on another episode. If you found the information within the show helpful, please leave a review on the platform you're listening to. It helps raise the show's visibility so other men can join us in breaking free. See you on the next episode, and remember to continue putting yourself out there. Have a great one.